I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
No, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at Geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
On the Pilot TV podcast this week, we're fixing leaks in the Nixon administration with Justin Theroux and Woody Harrelson in White House Plumbers on Sky, investigating a naked corpse and an aggressive sea mammal in Deadlock on Prime Video, and heading back to 18th century Yorkshire with Shane Meadows with the Gallows Pole on BBC Two. I'm The Raven, and welcome to the Pilot TV podcast, your essential guide to every show that matters, and a podcast that has just about got over the Barry finale, or rather I have, as I'm the only one on the team who has, at this present moment as we record, seen the finale of Barry. It was emotional. But I am joined, however, by my two less fortunate co-hosts, renowned Chechen gangster Noho K, and Boyd Hilton, who we'll just call Boho. Big week for finales, guys.
Guys, isn't it, guys?
Yeah. So DLC. Okay, so we're recording this on Thursday, but obviously we'll go out on Monday, as is our wont, and people will have seen the Barry finale, people will have seen the Succession finale,
more importantly,
and they'll be 2 days away from the Ted Lasso finale.
It's a big week. It's a lot.
Huge.
By the end of the week, we're going to need a big collective lie down.
By the way, how do you know you're the only one of us to have watched the Barry finale? I could have watched it this morning.
Oh, so you're saying, so since I mocked you on Pilot Plus and told you I'd seen it and you hadn't, I must admit, it would be very much in character for you to get in touch with HBO and go, I am TV's Boyd Hilton.
Oh, no, I've got the
screener. Why do I not have the screener?
No. I've always had the screener. I've had the screener for months. I just haven't got around to watching it yet, the finale.
I love how he got that in there. Yeah. He's had it for months, James. How long have you had it?
Before they even made it.
Yeah. Boyd's had it all along. Yeah. Bill Hader hand delivered it to his house.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Then I watched the penultimate Ted Lasso.
Which I have seen as well.
Oh, good.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which I was going to mention what we've been watching.
It's a real competitive air.
Very competitive.
Here.
Yeah.
I know you haven't seen the finale of Succession yet. Because
no one has. But you know there's a... do you know about this? There's a screening of it at the BFI on Sunday. So recording this on Friday.
But please note, Kate, the loaded nature of the do you know about this? Because what he's actually saying is, I was invited. No,
I wasn't invited.
Oh, you weren't?
No.
Would it surprise you, Boyd, to know that I was?
No, were you, James?
No, of course not.
I don't think any media has been invited.
I'm genuinely surprised you weren't.
I think this is so the screening Succession finale as it goes out globally. So at 2 a.m. in the morning, Sunday night, Monday morning, you can watch it on the big screen at the BFI in London. But then before that, at midnight, there is an event in which Jesse Armstrong, the showrunner, is being interviewed about the whole phenomenon.
Wow.
So it's a brilliant thing. So in the lead, so rather than doing a Q&A after the finale, as they're doing it before, a pre-finale Q&A.
Smart.
Which is smart, yeah. So it's like an epic midnight till effectively, 3:30 event, right? Obviously.
That's the only reason why I'm not going.
Yeah.
It's past my bedtime.
Yeah, exactly. I knew it's past your bedtime. Yeah. So this is an event that the BFI is staging, and they invited BFI members first. But then the only reason I know about it, so I think it's just been the people going are just BFI members rather than any media.
I thought you were though.
No. So what happened was I found out about it because I went to an event at the BFI on Monday, last Monday, for the new Sharon Horgan, Michael Sheen drama that we'll be reviewing soon, Best Interests, BBC One, coming soon. James is going to love it. That's all I'm going to say.
It's Sharon Horgan. It will be excellent.
It's heavyweight.
Anyway,
so there's that. So that's, I mean, this is all But the BFI dude there said, oh, you know, do you know about our Succession thing? On a, and, I said, and he said, well, it is already sold out. And I was like, oh, that's annoying.
Why would he mention it then?
Just because it is interesting that they're doing it. It's unusual for them to do to open the BFI at midnight to 3:30 a.m. It's quite a big deal for them to even handle this event. So it's
I thought
big.
He was saying it's taunting.
No, well, then he said, you know, email us and hopefully we'll get you a seat. But as at time of speaking now, I have not got a seat and I'm obviously furious. I'm still holding out, maybe at the last minute in the next couple of days. You know,
I think you're
going
to go.
I mean, even if I don't get a seat, I might just go and pick at them and, you know, like
stand outside.
Stalk Jesse Armstrong. Aww. Now, the other thing we should say is, of course, we are supposed to be getting the director, Mark Mylod, of the finale. And of he's directed most episodes of the show. He directs the first episodes and the last few episodes as well for a spoiler special podcast, aren't we, James? Yes,
we are.
I think any listeners who have a question should send them in.
Absolutely, 100%, yeah. Please
because,
do
you know, we've been through so many series together, we love it, it's finally coming to an end, and any burning questions you've ever had, now is the time, so Boyd O can get the answers for you.
Now is literally the time, yeah.
We should say, so we're going to be doing Pilot Plus spoiler specials for Succession and for Barry, possibly even Ted Lasso as well. So if you have questions for any of those things...
News to us.
All these things are happening.
This is an on-pod meeting right here. Yeah, we're doing
it. Should we do some more admin? Anything else you'd like to clear up?
Yeah, some HR
any
issues
any invoices
with you.
That need to go... Oh, HR, okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Should we get on to what we've been watching?
Yeah, although that is what... So what I've been watching is that thing of the BFI that was mentioned.
Right.
Best Interests.
Is it good then?
Well... I don't like to spoil things because we will be reviewing it, but yeah, it's really good.
Oh, good.
We've got Ted Lasso, the penultimate episode, I wanted to mention, because we didn't mention it on Pilot Plus, did we, James? But Ted Lasso, penultimate episode, we didn't mention it on Pilot Plus.
We didn't get a chance, because Kay vanished into the black hole of her internet connection.
What I want to say about it is that everything's kind of winding up how I, so far, as you'd kind of expect, in a way.
I think there'll be a rug pull.
I'll tell you what, the most ludicrous storyline...
Hang on. This is not a spoiler chat. It's very important to emphasise that.
Oh, we've ruined the joke. Basically, the biggest, most ludicrous storyline in the history of Ted Lasso happens in the penultimate episode.
Go on.
When Man City lose a game.
Oh, see? That would have... Oh, James, you ruined
it. Well, no, but we can cut that bit out so it just the joke will flow seamlessly.
Thanks.
It's good. It's a good joke. I don't understand it, but it's a good joke.
We know... So you remember the scene where Pep Guardiola, who is the greatest...
Yes, Chris says he's evil.
He is evil, but he's also the greatest football coach in the world,
right.
Undoubtedly.
Oh, really?
Yeah, 100%. He has a cameo as himself, and he has to act. Again, this isn't really a spoiler. Everyone knows he's appeared in it. But it's extraordinary to see. It's like, I'm trying to think of the equivalent in... He's like literally the god of football management.
I mean, I had no idea who he was, obviously.
Yeah. And he's acting, and he has to kind of interact with Ted. It's
How
really
does
interesting.
That go? I mean,
it's fascinating. He kind of does all right. Yeah, he does all right. But it is unbelievably implausible that Man City would lose a game to Richmond, I have to say. Because obviously they've won about 50
Let's not talk
row.
About it, though, because you get into a bad place.
No, I'm dealing with it perfectly well, thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fine. Okay. Yeah, so there's that. So Ted Lasso penultimate. Barry penultimate, amazing as well. But we can't talk about them without spoiling things. The thing that I wanted to mention last week that I completely forgot about, and that a number of correspondents have reminded me, thankfully, on Twitter.
Correspondents.
Is Inside Number 9.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know about this? So this is... I mean, it's not a spoiler anymore because this is the penultimate episode of the current series. So the series finished last week with a fantastic episode called The Last Weekend. So I want to, the whole Inside Number 9 phenomenon is just incredible to me. It's the most, I think I probably said it when we reviewed it, didn't we? And I interviewed Reese Hirschman and Steve Pemberton for this very podcast. It's one of the most undervalued shows on TV because it's constantly so clever and inventive. And these last couple of episodes have proven that beyond all doubt. So first of all, the last episode, which was called The Last Weekend, in which Reese Shearsmith and Steve Pemberton played gay lovers, was phenomenal. I was like, because you'd think they might have played gay lovers before because they've made, you know, 49 episodes of this show so far.
And was that the last episode?
Not ever of the series.
Oh, right.
Not ever. They're doing one more. They're doing the 9th series of Inside Number 9. That'll be
perfect.
The last series,
yeah.
But they played gay lovers, and it was really, it was, as ever, it was not how expected to turn out. No spoilers. It was really sick and twisted. Brilliantly sick and twisted.
Who else was in it?
Just them. There's one other cast member in it who I can't remember who the actress was, but yeah, it was pretty much focused heavily on them. Whereas the previous episode, they didn't feature at all.
What?
For the first time in the history of the show, They didn't feature at all. Do you know about this, Jeff?
No, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Good. The penultimate episode, the first one that neither Shearsmith nor Pemberton had been in. Now, this episode, this was extraordinary. This episode, the BBC sent out a synopsis, as usual, if you're a TV, a magazine that covers TV like we do at Heat and Empire to some extent. And it was going to be an episode called Hold On Tight. And it was going to be some kind of like allusion to On the Buses, you know, the 70s sitcom On the Buses, mm-hmm. which was kind of a legendary, cheesy, quite a cheesy, but the kind of show that they both... Reese and Steve would know all about and spoof and comment upon. And they had released a poster for it. They released a synopsis for it. They released pictures from it. Robin Asquith, the kind of veteran star of saucy 70s films and TV, it was in it. And they had clips, a trailer. Now, what they didn't do was allow...
Show it.
Yeah, they didn't give us screeners. And I was like, oh, okay. But, you know, I wasn't bothered. I remember asking for screeners, right, for the usual people at the BBC, as I do for, you know, and they were like, oh, no, we haven't got screeners for this one at the moment. And I let it lie. I didn't really think twice about it. I was like, fine. And then I watched the final episode that I was talking about where they play the gay lovers. I was like, let it go. The episode went out live, right, about a couple of Thursdays ago. And the continuity announcer said, sorry, I'm paraphrasing, sorry, but the original planned episode of Inside Number 9 has been postponed. Instead, here's an episode of our new quiz show, 3x3. And they put on a completely different episode of the show, which was a fake quiz show hosted by Lee Mack, shot in the style of an actual quiz show. You'd never know in a million years if you suddenly tuned in. People complained. People went to social media and went, I can't believe Inside Number 9 has been replaced by this cheesy quiz show hosted by Lee Mack. But it was an episode of Inside Number 9 that they hadn't told anyone about. And
that's amazing.
It was a trick.
I love that.
Yeah. Wouldn't a lot of people have turned off?
Yeah, this is what happened. They did it with the special Halloween episode a few years ago. Do you remember when they did the Halloween episode, in which it kind of went wrong, and the continuity announcer said, "Sorry, we've lost," and people got annoyed and turned off. But they're so prepared; they don't care. They're so prepared to go through with the journalists. They're fine with people switching off. Yeah, to some extent, people will have switched off.
You've got to respect them.
Honestly, and it's on iPlayer now, and you missed the continuity announcer at the beginning, kind of apologising. But you watch the show, you'll see it is. Incredible.
And they're not in it at all?
No. There's three teams of families. So the format of this fake quiz show hosted by Lee Mack is there's three. So it's 3x3 was the clue, as in 9, right? Tell that there's three families competing in a kind of general knowledge quiz format, roughly. One of the families gets increasingly weird and kind of like there's like a quite passag between them with the mother, the father, and their daughter. And it gets weirder and weirder. And I won't spoil it, the ending. All to say is it is a proper shock ending to this thing, right? But just the magnificence of the accuracy. The director is Barbara Wiltshire, who directs like Would I Lie to You? She's a director of quiz shows.
Oh my God, they've gone to extreme lengths. This is brilliant.
Full on.
This is commitment to the joke.
It is superb, honestly. You have to see it.
Do you think it loses anything because they're not in it?
No, not at all, because it's such a... If they'd have been in, it would have ruined it, because you would have known instantly that it was... Yeah. Whereas people who watched it live, genuinely like, what the fuck is going on? Is this or isn't this an episode of Inside Number 9? You're trying to work it out. Fans of the show would have worked out pretty quickly that it was, because the one family that was being a bit weird...
If you were watching it live, do you think you would have spoiled it?
Pretty quickly.
Yeah. How long into the episode?
About 5 minutes. I'll tell you, the only main reason why is because the family that's being a bit weird... The acting, they're doing, the families that aren't being weird are brilliant. Their acting is so good. You completely believe they're contestants in a quiz show.
Yeah.
But the family that's being a bit weird, who has to be, and it gets worse and worse as it goes on, they're clearly acting.
Right.
But there's no way around that. I'm not saying they're not brilliant actors. I'm just saying you can see the
it's
subtle
noticeable.
Difference. Yeah, they have to be a bit odd. And that oddness is where.
Oh, you made me want to watch it.
But it's an absolute work of genius. Underlining again that Inside Number 9 is just one of the greatest TV phenomena of our time. I'm not exaggerating. And this episode and what they've done with it was so good. So, yeah, everyone watch it. Check it out.
How do we top that?
I don't know. Kay, what have you got?
Do you know what? I'm going to be very quick because I have watched absolutely nothing.
Is it because you went on holiday?
Wow.
She
went away for like one day.
That's true.
I was gallivanting for about 3 or 4 days. And no, but I have watched stuff, but it's not pilot appropriate. So I'm not going to mention
it. So you've been watching reality bollocks, is what you're telling me.
I may
or may... stopped you before.
No, but then he gets all like grumpy.
Well, can't worry about that. Okay.
I may or may not have binged something.
What?
Come on.
Say it.
Fess up. What is it?
Actually, I know what it is as well. And it's completely valid. We actually... talked about this show when it first went out. Well, me and Terry did, obviously.
Selling Sunset.
Yeah.
The new show.
Even he knows what
I know what it is. Okay, I know what it is because Terry banged on about it endlessly.
Yeah.
The new series dropped on Thursday and I'd been like, it'd been a really hard week, busy week, and I needed to like...
Don't make excuses.
No.
I thought you were going to say you binge watched the first four series of Naked Attraction to prepare for the podcast. I'd be like, now that's commitment.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Can I... Just interrupting service. So just to wrap that up. Yeah, I watched that and it's not as good as the previous seasons, but the property porn and the fucking ridiculous outfits just, you know, tick the boxes for me. That's what I needed. And I've watched the whole thing except for the penultimate episode. So,
it's
yeah.
brilliant. I'm actually keeping it in reserve to watch it like
really?
One weekend. Yeah, I love Selling Sunset. I was watching Selling Sunset before you were in like short trousers.
I like how you're trying to claim everything now. You've
Absolutely.
Claimed that. You've claimed this episode of number
I've
9.
I've gone about Selling Sunset
Dude,
years
I
ago.
Watched it before you. Just admit
I,
it.
I when I went to LA...
You.
No, that's not true. We
what?
Watched it at the same time, Kate.
No,
yes.
I watched
we did.
It.
Boyd probably watched Selling Sunset on Sunset.
No.
Well,
I watched it at least a day before.
What I did do is when I went to LA.
Did you go to the Oppenheimer?
Recently. I went past
Yeah, I did. I've done that, Boyd.
And you know it's all blacked out now.
So, oh, is it?
Yeah. They've blacked out all the windows because obviously people kept peering in nosily, looking at them all working. And so I mentioned this to someone when I was on visiting the Late Late Show with James Corden. Someone said that they're not even there most of the time now because obviously they're all filming busy.
Also, I have to say the logo is pretty shit.
Oh yeah, it's part of the whole appeal of it. It's quite tacky.
It is weird. But okay, Boydo, what I'd say is the outfits this year, this season, are fucking ridiculous.
I mean, I mainly watch it for the homes.
Properties.
The properties.
Oh my God, the properties are like insane.
Ridiculous.
I mean, there's one property that has like, I don't know, say 4 bedrooms but 19 bathrooms. I mean like...
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah. Standard.
Yeah. So anyway, that's what I've been watching and what was I... Oh yes, I just wanted to call back to you and the Naked Attraction. The amount of tweets and messages we've had about your weird obsession with Naked Attraction.
My weird obsession that I watched one episode.
Yeah. But you talked about the entire episode. Just kept on talking about, you know, genitalia. Anyway, so yeah, we've had a lot of messages about that. And I said I was going to set up a support group.
A support group for people who had to listen to me talk about Naked Attraction.
Yeah, from listening to you go on and about Naked Attraction.
That seems fair.
I was thinking now, maybe that could be a special crossover episode of Inside Number 9 and Naked Attraction.
I'd watch that.
Oh, yeah, that would be good.
That'd be good. I might suggest that.
Yeah, tweet
to the
them.
Guys.
DM them.
And I'm just remembering, of course, I interviewed them for this podcast.
You did?
And they
in
lied
bed?
About that On the Buses episode then as well. I was you've got the On the Buses style episode coming. And I was we have. We can't really go into that.
Do you feel a little bit hurt?
No, I feel like brilliant that I was even part of their lying scheme.
Oh my God, he's made himself part of it now.
Yeah, I feel like I'm part of it.
Yeah. You help perpetuate the lie.
Yeah.
Very good.
Inside Number Naked.
Oh, no, let's not go there. Yeah. Right.
No, let's not.
What
let's
about you,
definitely
Jay?
Not go there.
What have you been watching? Say more Naked Attraction.
I have not watched any more Naked Attraction.
No, would you tell us if you had?
Don't. Of course I would. I think it would become the theme of this podcast if I had absolutely watched any more. No, but I've not seen any more Naked Attraction. Obviously, I've been watching a lot of Barry because not only have I watched the finale of Barry, which Boyd hasn't, the finale, I have been privy to the finale of Barry. I also watched... basically the whole of season 4 and half of season 3 because that's where last week I was still on season 2, I think, which means I got to the motorbike chase in season 3 episode 6, which is wild. That was an extraordinary episode of TV. Barry is magnificent.
Someone tried to downplay that. I remember at the time when I was banging on about how incredible that
what you may have said is like the greatest chase in the history of filmed entertainment, which might be overstating it a little bit, but it was very good. Okay. It was a marvellous show. It was no, you know, like Ronnie Lilly, but it was fucking great. Yeah.
Ronnie Lilly.
Yeah. It was very good. So I watched that. I read something. I got sent a book by Bernard Cornwell called Uhtred's Feast.
Oh, here we go.
This is absolutely true. So The Last Kingdom is finished and even the book series is finished, but they've come out with a new one that came out this month and it's Uhtred's Feast. I swear to God, I'm not even joking about this. So it's not just three Uhtred the Bebbanburg short stories. It has authentic Saxon recipes in the book. It's also a cookbook.
Oh my God.
Oh my gosh. Are you going to cook something from it?
I might do. It's things like pickled turnip and there's something called Saxon rub, which sounds like a sex act.
Sex and rub?
No, not sex, Saxon rub. And apparently that's a thing that you can make.
Like you're going back to Naked Attraction.
Yeah, they've got peas pudding in there as well. So all authentic Saxon dishes. So if you want to find out what happened to Uhtred of Bebbanburg, you can read a bit more of that. But also if you want to make some of his food, food. You can do that with this book.
Is this, my mate watches the show and she always goes, son of, is that son of
Uhtred? Uhtred, son of Uhtred. Oh, also son of Uhtred, grandson of Uhtred. There's three generations of Uhtreds.
She was trying to get me to watch that and I was like, I don't think that's
I believe
me.
The first...
Has she ever met you before?
Yeah. I don't think you'd like The Last Kingdom.
My best she was like, yeah, you got to watch it, son of Uhtred. And I was like, not sure about that.
I think the first line of the first book is like, my name is Uhtred, son of Uhtred, grandson of Uhtred or something like that.
I read a Bernard Cornwell book once.
Yeah.
One of the, it's like 1,000 page long. Obviously, this was for the Sign Mate Book Review program that I mentioned.
You did it in front of him. Was Bernard there?
Bernard was on the phone.
Oh my God.
Yeah, yeah. It was one of the, it was set in, it was about the painting of, is this ring a bell? Like Leonardo da Vinci. Am I making this? I feel like that.
I mean,
era.
I feel like Uhtred wasn't in that
no,
one.
No, this is not, so it's a different series of books.
Because he's done the Sharp books and all sorts
was
of things.
It was
a whole series. It was pretty interesting. Yeah. Yeah.
Historical fiction is his jam.
Yes. Yeah. But of different, like epic numbers of books in different. Yeah. Totally different eras. I mean, what?
He's written a lot.
He is prolific.
He is.
Wow.
It's quite impressive.
Yeah. So well, what? So
so that's what I was reading slash eating. Also,
you cook any of the recipes?
Also, yeah, I love a bit of Saxon rub.
Mind boggles.
back to Naked Attraction again.
On Naked Attraction.
Yeah. So I also watched some more Colin from Accounts.
Yes, James.
Yes, enjoyed. To be fair, so I'm doing this slowly. Obviously, it's me. It's the one where she wees in the drawer.
Which
again, it's a classic, and with the date and stuff, it's very, very funny. Again, the cringe is real. Like that causes me some pain.
I'm doing a little James service here by telling you episode 7 you're going to want to shoot yourself in the face.
I listened to your interview with them and I was like, I'm going to need a trigger warning for episode 7.
I wanted to rip my face off. In the second rewatching of it, I couldn't watch episode 7. I stopped. I haven't continued now. Because it's just unbearable and you feel so bad for him. But
I enjoyed your interview with them last week.
Thanks.
They were delightful.
I loved talking to them. And the fact that, you know, I said this before, but the fact that that's her first script. She's never, you know, she's just done it off the hoof, hasn't studied it at all. She just did it. And I really love that she wanted to have her name on it and not his.
Yes, because she was like, if they sort of co-write them, people might think that she wasn't really.
And that's exactly what would have happened. Yeah. So good for her. Yeah. And also the stunt dog, it's not really, you know.
Yeah.
Couple of
stunt dogs.
Oh, I'm glad.
So yes, so did that. Also, I watched 2 episodes of Star Trek. Specifically, you poo-poo at this.
It's a zone
but
out.
Crucially, I went back to Star Trek Strange New Worlds, which I had long given up on because of the slightly procedurally format. However, I've done a bit of a reverse tribble on this. I don't know. So basically, I was thinking, this is like classic Trek in terms of its structure. It's very sort of standalone episodes. But the character growth is extremely well planned out and methodical, which classic Trek, that was not the case. So you do feel, even though they're self-contained kind of capsule stories, there's significant character growth in every episode. So actually, I'm quite into it. And also, I don't know, maybe it was the headspace I was in last night. I was quite stressed out, but I found that kind of standalone, like, you know, planet of the week type thing, I found it quite soothing. So I think I'm going to just gently go through all these Strange New Worlds episodes. And it's really good Star Trek. It really is.
Oh, is that for the new series?
No, this is the first series.
Oh, okay. I'm coming out. The new series is out soon.
The new series is out soon. Absolutely true.
Rather than watching anything new, he's going back.
Yeah. I'm going back. But.
To his safe place.
I finished that. And it wasn't quite my bedtime. It was nearly my bedtime, but not quite my bedtime.
What time's bedtime?
So at the moment, I'm trying to head up to bed around 10:30 because I've been very tired recently. So I'm feeling like I need that little bit of extra sleep.
I think you need to head to bed for sure earlier than that, man.
No, but this is early. Like normally, I'm like
a bed
at midnight.
You need to start walking up those stairs at 10.
Oh, no, let's not be silly. So anyway, so I finished Strange New Worlds at 10. I was like, oh, I don't have time to watch another one. I should watch something else. So I was like, oh, I know what I'll do. I'll watch an episode of Star Trek Lower Decks because I constantly get badgered about watching
James,
Lower Decks and I've refused to do it because it's an adult animation and I don't really do that sort of thing, but I was like, no, I'll watch it. And I watched the Deep Space Nine episode because Helen O'Hara recommended that and everyone's like, you'll watch the Deep Space Nine episode because I love Deep Space Nine, as the UK having watched it. So I watched the Deep Space Nine episode of Star Trek. Major Kira's in it, Quark's in it, it's got the music, riffs on the whole Deep Space Nine thing, it's nice to see the promenade and they were making fun of the fact that Jake used to sit up on the little balcony thing. Like it was quite fun. I still don't like the show. I don't know what to tell you.
No, because it's animated.
I can't get on board with it. I can't. I tried. I can't. So I watched it and I was like, oh yeah, I get the real, I can't. And we're going to talk about this a little bit later because just to skip ahead to news, there was a trailer came out for Star Trek Strange New Worlds season two. And not only does it feature Stefan from The Vampire Diaries as Captain Kirk, but the two characters, Jack Quaid and the other character, Mariner, who plays Mariner from Lower Decks, are live actionified in Star Trek Strange New World, which strikes me as an odd tonal fit, right?
Live actionified.
Yeah, so they've been live actionified and they're going to be live action in Strange New Worlds, but the tones of those two things are very different. And then someone said, oh, but that episode's also going to have animation in it. I'm like, I'm sorry, what? So it's going to be part Lower Decks animated series, part episode of Strange New Worlds.
That's interesting. Now you've put my interest in it.
But again, the tones don't go together.
Yeah, but you're very much hung up on tones. You're always banging on about tonal this. Every film review you do on the Empire podcast is tonal this.
Tonal this, tonal
it's
that.
It's such an overused, you know, criticism of stuff. I always think, I don't care. Mixing tones is great.
No, don't like it. Can't be dealing with it. See, again, it's because we watch TV differently.
Yeah.
For it to suck me into the narrative, I need the tone to be, you know, at least semi-consistent.
Yeah.
Or it's just, I find it jarring.
Because intrinsically, it's not a critique. It's like sometimes tonal shifts work brilliantly. It's how you do it. How you pull it off.
So someone like From Dusk Till Dawn, which has that very clear sort of like shift at the halfway point in the movie, so it stops being one film entirely and becomes a completely separate genre. Like that works for me,
right? For you, yeah. But I don't even mean that. I mean, a film can have a different tone one scene to the next and still work.
Yeah, but those are tones that blend together, right? They're subtly compatible tones. It's when you take completely different things. Like for example, you couldn't have Zucker Abrams Zucker take on a Shane Meadows thing, right? Like those are two tones that I would argue do not really go together, as we will find out later on.
That's an interesting point. Well, now you've thrown ahead to something that I was. Well, we'll have to wait and see.
We'll get into this later.
We'll get into that later.
All right,
yeah.
We'll get into this later. Okay, fine. This has all got a bit off the rails. Right, that's what we've been watching. I am going to use this moment to tee up something slightly different, which is that we are at this very moment. Point, okay, looking at me because I have no idea what I'm talking about. We are staging the Great Pilot TV Poll, which is launching today on the Empire website.
Like,
if you go to
what the fuck is going on? First of all, he hasn't drawn breath in the last 5 minutes. I was actually thinking, what the hell's he on? Like, has he had too much caffeine, or is he so like jazzed up on Star Trek?
That's now, what it is. Yeah.
And now he's announcing a poll. That what?
Yeah,
what?
We are having a
this
poll.
This is like when Tom Wamsgams took coke in the election night.
We're having a pilot TV poll to discover the best TV show of all time. So this poll,
first we've heard about it.
Yeah, I'm revealing it exclusively to you two now on the show.
Why? Just
so if you go to empireonline.com/best TV voting, I think that's the website. I haven't set it up yet, so I don't know.
I'm going to
say empireonline.com/best TV voting, all one word. Go and do it now. Empireonline.com/best TV voting. And you can vote for your top 10 shows of all time. And we're going to compile these into the ultimate list of the greatest TV shows ever. This is the thing that's going to happen.
And is this just because?
It's just because. Yeah, it's just because. It's a thing that's happening.
Okay.
It'll obviously take us ages to compile the vote, so don't expect it to happen anytime soon. But go and vote now. Empireonline.com/best TV voting, I think, because I haven't done it yet. And vote for your favouritist ever shows.
Well,
okay. It sounds good. I'll be sure to do it.
With the caveat that shit like Naked Attraction and fucking Pottery Throwdown are not eligible for this list.
How dare you?
What I was going to say is that you don't just mean scripted. You mean it's open scripted.
Oh, no, I mean scripted shows. It's definitely scripted shows.
Have you made that clear?
100% scripted shows.
Have you made that clear on the website?
Well, no, because I haven't done it on the website. It's not done. It doesn't exist yet. It's a hypothetical poll at this point.
Oh, I see.
But it will be in place by the time this goes out.
I think it should include anything on TV.
Of course you do. But, you know, for us, this is no.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That's one word for it.
Yeah. Because you know that rules out, for example, it rules out Naked Attraction, but it also rules
out. Yes, it does. I can live with that.
Yeah, it also rules out like Life on Earth, you know, David Attenborough's show or something like that.
Excuse me, it rules out Traitors.
Yeah, it does. It does 100% rule out the
I was
traitors.
Trying to find something that he'd be more recognized as being
anything that is
classic of TV, rather like.
No, but he hates Attenborough.
No one hates Attenborough.
Wow.
That's a big claim.
That was a huge claim. Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Even James doesn't hate
I'm not that kind of monster. What's wrong with you?
Well, oi, Attenborough.
No.
Jesus wept. All right, fine. Brilliant. Well, that was my announcement that Boyd and Kay totally knew about before now. Yeah. I do like to drop a bombshell on you wherever possible. Should we have a question? Should we have this week's question? Okay. Well, do you know what? Before we have the question,
What now?
There's a deep sigh from
what
Boyd.
Now?
I mean, is the question, what the fuck have you done creating this poll?
Yeah, what else are you going to throw at us?
What is going
on? So I think Kay will be on board with this. So I wanted to talk about some recent reviews.
Okay.
Okay. Okay's looking a bit, concerned.
They're not bad reviews, are they?
Well, we'll see.
Okay.
So I will bring up my latest digest that we got sent, because there were a couple of things I wanted to mention. And I can't remember why, incidentally. I just remember at the beginning of the week thinking, I should definitely do that on the podcast. Mm. Don't remember what I was doing. But let's see.
I'm all about the numbers rather than the...
Didn't you have a number you wanted to share on this podcast?
Yes,
would you want to share it now while I'm looking for the review?
Right, so... As some of us who were listening, I mean, that was not me, but when a couple of weeks ago we said that if we reached a certain number of reviews on the Apple podcast app, then James will get out his guitar and he would play us something. Wow. I think that number was 1,200, wasn't it? Well, James, just to let you know that the total reviews that we're on now is 1,193.
And where were we before?
Oh, we were like about 16, 17 off. So,
but I'm pretty sure that the rules were if we doubled the number of Pilot Plus subscribers, I would play Toss a Coin to Your Witcher on the guitar.
Yeah,
I'm pretty certain.
Yeah, I can't believe
that's
you even
what we agreed to do.
Yeah, no one wants that.
I think when it gets to 2,000 reviews on the Apple podcast app, then we get to choose a different song. Just one, you know, just for his, to
you just made that up.
Humiliate him. No, I said it a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
None of you listen. so we're seven.
Actually,
off.
Do you know what? In all seriousness, I think James Dyer performing Toss a Coin to Your Witcher could go viral in a major way. So you know, it depends whether
I am going to have to. I have not.
How prepared are you?
I mean, not at all. I've
global,
not touched my guitar in months. So.
Global internet stardom.
That's it.
Please, can we do it in 7 reviews?
Because wasn't there some guy? Didn't some guy write in recently saying he's watched every single version of that song?
Well, I mean, I could be one of those.
He's going to lead the march. Isn't
he, that could be it.
Oh my gosh!
My definitive version in many ways of Toss a Coin to Your Witcher.
So you committed to it?
Yes, when we double the number of Pilot Plus subscribers, I will 100% break out my guitar.
He's reneging on the deal. Okay, fine, guys. That was my breaking news.
Okay, good. Well, that's positive. So I wanted to read out a review. I'm now beginning to regret it before I've even done it, but I've kind of set this up now, so I don't see any way out of this. But anyway, this comes to us from BE via Apple Podcast, from the US.
Oh.
One of our American cousins. And it says, this is a fine podcast about peak TV, but discerning viewers will find in it a compelling dramedy about the challenges of working with James Dyer, a man diagnosed with Bellarius Endus, a chronic condition that causes intense aesthetic preferences, hypocrisy, narrow judgments, and an inability to laugh.
Yeah.
This frustrating but likable soul is joined by TV superstar Boyd Hilton and every woman Kay Ribeiro, who try to manage Dyer's excesses and absurdities and secure the occasional cake.
That's a good one.
Who is this heroic interlocutor?
This is BE.
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 Wow.
Nice. There you go.
What a great
I'd question
person.
The word likable, but yeah.
How are you an every woman? I'm confused by that as well.
Oh. I can see that.
Okay.
Thank you, Boyd.
Voice of the people.
Mm. There we go. Good. Well, anyway, so that was the review that I wanted to read out.
Yeah, no.
Okay. That's not this week's question. This week's question is an entirely separate endeavour. And that comes from Michael Canine.
Michael
says, hi, team. Love the pod. Much to my shock, and I'm sure to Kay's delight, my six-year-old twin daughters have recently found themselves not being absorbed by the usual animation fare on the small screen, but they are now very much enjoying The Great British Sewing Bee.
Yes, come on.
How am I not surprised that you watched that? Going back to your own childhoods, what TV shows can you recall watching that were perhaps targeted more at the slightly older generation?
Hmm.
Well, I've mentioned before how I was brought up in a very, how can we put it, in a household where I was basically allowed to watch anything, whatever the hell I wanted.
This explains a lot.
Yeah. So I, funnily enough, I was thinking, you know, I remember watching some of the classic TV dramas of all time that were very daring and risque. I mean, not even just for their time, just generally. Like, I Claudius, right, or I Clavzivs, as it's known, which I'm not going to say when it came out, right, but that show, you know, deals with... You know, Caligula, for example, a man who had a relationship with his own horse, which is depicted in this show, by the way. Incest, sexual assault, of violence, very, very violent deaths, poisoning. I mean, that's, you know, by the
by. How old were you when you watched this?
Now, this is the thing, right? So I was thinking, oh yeah, I remember watching I, Claudius when I was a kid, basically, entirely inappropriately. Do you know what year I, Claudius came out? This is in 1976.
Uh-huh.
I was 9.
Oh my gosh, Boydo, no. Yeah. Bestiality.
And I watched it. Yeah. I mean, I watched
absolutely
it.
Absolutely not.
And it's fine, you know. You can be the judge. You can be the judge.
It doesn't explain a lot.
Similarly, the other one, the ones I really remember vividly watching when I was a kid are I Claudius, I Clavdivs, Bouquet of Barbed Wire, which I've mentioned before. Bouquet of Barbed Wire was ITV's unbelievably kind of raunchy and daring Sunday night drama created by Andrea Newman, which also, by the way, had a big incest storyline and was really like difficult and edgy and challenging. Again, that was also 1976. What a year for TV, by the way.
Yeah.
Very incest heavy. It's a big year for incest dramas.
God.
But yeah, I watched Bouquet of Barbed Wire and absolutely loved it. And I was thinking to myself, maybe they were repeated them when I was older. But no, absolutely not. I watched them
so
when...
So what, Mrs. Hilton
face.
Was just like...
My dad and my mum, they were like...
Yeah, get on with it.
Laissez-faire, you know, we'll be fine, you can cope. And the other show, which relates to one of the shows we're reviewing today, which is less kind of adult in terms of its of the raunchiness and all of that, but was nevertheless kind of absolutely not aimed at 9-10-year-olds. This went out when I was 10, which is Washington Behind Closed Doors. Washington Behind Closed Doors, which told the Watergate story, which we will be covering later with White House Plumbers, was basically like they had... They used a different, they didn't call it President Nixon. They had kind of a president who was just like Nixon, but was called something else, placed by Jason Robards. And it was all about the ins and outs of Watergate and the American politics. And I loved it. And that came out in 1977 when I was 10. So it's a precocious little twat. I was like fascinated by Washington Behind Closed Doors. I thought it was amazing, this miniseries about American politics and Watergate. So I was like vaguely aware of Watergate when I was 10.
That does explain a lot.
Which is insane. But yeah, so those are about three examples of the stuff I was watching when I was a kid. Wildly inappropriate.
Mine aren't shocking like that, I don't think.
Go on.
Okay, so first of all, I remember clearly watching Rising Damp.
Oh, yeah.
When I was little.
Yeah.
With Leonard Rosser and Frankie De La Tour.
De La Tour.
And then also The Good Life. I was quite obsessed with that when I was young. Yeah. And even now, I've got it on box set, DVD. And finally, Boydo, this is one that you will... know very well, Girls on Top.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. Oh, I used to watch that as well.
Yeah. But remember comedy. The songs. Do you remember I went through a phase of singing them at you?
Yes,
at
I do remember you going through a phase of singing. I'm not sure if that phase is finished.
It hasn't. In fact, I sang it so much that for my birthday, then he bought me the box set just so I'd shut up.
Yeah. Did I?
Yeah, for my birthday.
How long ago was that?
Maybe like 6, 7 years.
Boyd has no recollection.
No, yeah. I recommend it vaguely, but it was a while ago.
I was
it
so wasn't like, excited.
It was like last year.
It was about 5 years.
This was French Saunders and Ruby Wax, wasn't it?
Yeah, yes. And also, who else did it have in it? Ruby Wax, Dawn French, Jennifer Saunders. Who's the other lady? The one with blonde hair.
The other lady, yeah, blonde hair.
Oh, God, that's so annoying. I'm going to look her up when you do that. Helen
Lederer.
Yes, Helen Lederer. And also Hugh Laurie was in it as the boyfriend, Tom, the famous...
Oh, I don't remember the story.
Oh.
The only image in my head, I remember watching it, obviously I would have been young at the time, the only image I remember is Dawn French being in a vent, looking through a grill at men peeing in your urinal and sort of like... tried to sort of angle it so she could see what was going on. And just, I remember my mum walking in at that point and be like, what are you watching?
It was fantastic.
Also saw Tracy Ullman.
Oh, yeah.
God, it was star-studded. Robbie Coltrane, Harry Enfield, all of those people around. In fact, the only person who isn't in it from that period pretty much is Stephen Fry.
Joanna Lumley, I don't think, was in it, was she?
But she came later, though. These were the comedy... She wasn't really known for comedy at that time. She did after Ab Fab. But this is all... John Sessions, of course. Alan Rickman was in it.
Wow.
Amazing. Yeah, absolutely incredible.
It's a classic. I wonder if you can watch it anywhere.
And do you know who wrote and performed the title song?
No, who?
Glenn Tilbrook and Chris Difford off of Squeeze, one of my favourite bands of all time.
What is Squeeze?
I don't know Squeeze.
You've never heard of Squeeze?
I've never heard of Squeeze.
Sing one of their songs.
Oh, I know the song.
Yeah,
I know the song.
Yeah. Were they a ska band?
No, they were like post-punk, new wavy pop, but on the very much on the pop. They're in the kind of Elvis Costello, Nick Lowe squeeze. That was like a little group of very talented singer-songwriters.
Okay.
Absolutely
that's
legendary.
A great fact.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everyone should watch. Everyone go back and revisit Girls on Tops because it was like hilarious. I mean, I say hilarious, but you know, it was very, very funny.
It was funny.
Very, very funny.
Okay.
Very funny.
Very, very, very funny.
What about you, Jimbo?
See, mine were all around that same era because they're all sort of mid-80s shows, but a lot of them were kind of American sort of crimey type things. I remember, I used to watch Hunter. Do you remember Hunter with Fred Dreyer?
Oh, of course.
No. Yeah. And Cover Up. Do you remember Cover Up? Similar kind of like police. I can't actually remember the plot of Cover Up, but that was around the same thing. But it was kind of like, definitely wasn't aimed at my age group, but I used to watch that. And Dempsey and Make Peace,
oh, yeah.
Things like that. I also remember I used to watch Dynasty, Dallas, Colbys.
Yeah.
So I used to sit and watch it with my mum and my grandma.
Same. Mm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Did you? God, that's one of the, my God, the main things we've got in common is we're being bored, middle-aged, middle-class, tosspots.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Love the Carringtons.
Yeah. What was the one where they went up in a spaceship, didn't they?
They went up in a spaceship?
There was definitely a spaceship ending. To
okay,
one of the
I missed
of.
The spaceship episode oh, of the have to, fucking Dynasty.
You think of Button
I think
Mane?
It was the Colbys.
I remember when the Colbys started, I remember Ricardo Montalban. Khan! I was there as Zach Powers. And obviously, Joe Collins as Alexis Colby because the Colbys was spun off of Dynasty, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So,
if you Google it, the Colbys, Fallon boards a UFO.
I genuinely don't remember Fallon boarding the UFO.
The 1987 series ended with alien abduction.
I think I tuned out by then.
Yeah. Did the whole show end very soon after that?
I think so. Yeah, fairly soon after. Yeah,
but I don't know how you like continue after that.
But Dallas, of course, did the whole season.
Yes, the reset. I remember I watched all that when it was airing the Big Bobby reset.
Yeah,
Big Bobby reset.
if we have that confirmed.
Yeah, I used to watch Neighbours religiously back then as well.
But that was age appropriate, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't inappropriate. Also, it was on directly after John Craven's News Round, so I think it was completely completely fine for me to watch at that particular age.
You tuned in for John Craven's News Round.
Of course
and then
he did.
And then watched
he
Neighbours.
He tuned in for Big JC.
So Neighbours was fine. Neighbours was fine. And then the other thing was, you remember when V aired? Which was like, as far as back as I remember, that was the first event television thing. It was the first TV event that I can recall.
In that genre. Yeah, I mean, there were loads of TV
events. It was one of these things where everyone was tuning in to watch this event TV going out. V was, how do you not know V? V was like, it's like really famous alien invasion series.
You're
had Mark Singer in it. That is true. Michael Ironside was in it. It was great. And Robert Englund was in it. And it was about the visitors coming to Earth. It had lots of Nazi allegories to it, but they were like lizards in skin suits. Well,
V was 1983, by the way. And so, for example, Roots, which was a TV phenomenon, which was way bigger deal.
That.
Right, that was 1977.
Okay,
so
I didn't watch
it.
That's
why I mentioned the genre.
Okay, fine. Well, okay, V is the first one in history. It's certainly the first one I remember. But crucially, I wasn't allowed to watch it because my bedtime was like 7 o'clock.
Aww.
And so my friends would all be watching V and I would have to go to bed and couldn't watch it.
Oh,
I do remember that.
Can you sneak a little portable TV?
I don't know. I watched one episode at a friend's house. I remember that. That was cheeky. But I didn't actually get to watch V because it was in two parts, wasn't it? You had the original V miniseries, then you had V The Final Battle, which was the concluding part of it. I don't know how far apart those things aired. But I remember. So I didn't see V properly until years later when I got it on VHS.
And you realised it was terrible.
It's a product of its age.
I know.
Not aged brilliantly. Even now, it's better than the Morena Baccarin 2000 and whatever it was, Naughty's remake of V, which was not great.
Oh, yeah, that was terrible.
Yeah, that was terrible.
Yeah.
V holds up to an extent. I enjoyed that. So I think I did like those things more than a lot of the childhood fare.
Oh, yeah, gotcha. Yeah.
That is our question answered. If you would like your question answered either here or via the bulging Pilot Plus postbag, do send your thoughts, questions, feedback, whatever you like, into us at Pilot TV Pod via DM on Twitter or Instagram, or direct to me at James C. Dyer, but on Instagram only. Let's move on to news. And where do we even start? I'm loath to repeat things we talked about on the Empire podcast, but we may have to because we touched on two things which are very, I would say, relevant to our audience on this particular show, which of course both streaming related. One is the egregious removal of things like, Why the Last Man and Willow from existence, thanks to Disney Plus. And the other thing is the great Netflix password crackdown, which is coming to force this week, or rather last week by the time this goes out.
Yeah, that has affected the Ribeiro household.
Has it?
Yeah.
Are you a password sharer?
Yeah, I was. Until I was with my sister, and then now we've gone our separate ways.
Oh.
Yeah. But I think it's terrible about the stuff being taken out of the libraries and the archives.
Yeah, yeah.
Later shit.
Because, like, Why the Last Man essentially doesn't exist anymore, and neither does Willow.
Mm. That's sad, because, you know, people, when they get cancelled, at least they know that they're you know, the back catalogue can still be watched, and, you know, people still get to find out about their work that they've worked so hard on, and then to have that just completely removed.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's bad. Yeah, I mean, it's bad enough that both those shows were cancelled, even though Why the Last Man I had mixed feelings about. I did watch every episode, though. And Willow was decent as well. It's bad enough they were cancelled, and now they have been essentially erased from existence, which just feels like a kick in the teeth.
And the Willow was really recent, wasn't it? It was just like, wasn't it last year?
Really recent,
and why the thingy was the year before, I think. But that's what shocks me, is that, because the previous example, what was the previous streamer that started deleting stuff?
Was it Netflix?
There was another one. I don't think Netflix has ever deleted stuff, actually, to give them credit. There was the first story about, do you remember, who was deleting content? Like,
well, obviously there was the Batgirl film that was never shown.
Right.
But it was a tax write-off, so it was never actually shown at all.
It was part of Warner Discovery, HBO kind of.
I don't know if that's the same thing that's happened to Snowpiercer season 4, which was incidentally shot and finished, but never aired.
That is weird.
Why was it never aired?
It's unclear. Is it TNT in the States? I can't remember, and it was Netflix over here. Hasn't shown anywhere at all, despite being finished.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
But the content, I was going back to, I think it was the Warner Brothers Discovery stuff, felt like it was content from quite a while ago and didn't seem, I mean, this may be unfair, and didn't seem that major. But these are, Willow was literally just last year.
Yeah.
And Why the Thingy Dude was a big budget, huge thing that, like, I remember they went on, banged on about relentlessly. Huge. It wasn't like one of those shows that they don't even talk about because they're kind of slightly ashamed of it. And then to remove them, it is unbelievable.
Yeah, it's mad. Just to save a little bit of money they don't want to pay out to people.
Apparently saving
kind of residuals.
It must be quite a lot of, isn't it? It kind of ties into, doesn't it, the writer's strike?
A little bit. Obviously, they think they're saying. So my understanding is, I thought the writer's strike was because they're not getting residuals. I think it's because the residuals need to be updated for the streaming age, rather than they don't get any at all. But I imagine people are getting residuals from streaming in some capacity, and that's what they don't want to pay out. But yeah, they've removed them forever. I don't think Willow has a physical disc release, does it? Does it? I mean, I have no idea. But if it doesn't, then it literally can't get it anywhere.
Yeah, I don't remember having
it. Maybe it will now get a physical release. Now. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe that's what they're right.
But it feels quite shit. And I think partly it's the compact, isn't it? That I feel like we entered into a compact with these streamers whereby we agreed to pay a monthly fee for access to their catalogue. And then when they start removing stuff for the catalogue, it becomes like, oh, so we actually do need to start buying Blu-rays again, because you can just remove the shit whenever you want.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, the Netflix password thing, didn't they? When isn't again? I'm kind of my memory, which, as we know, is not at the best of times functioning that well. But I'm sure when Netflix first, they kind of encouraged you to share passwords within families and stuff, didn't they? I think so.
Yeah, yeah, I think so, because that's why I originally did it with my sister.
Yeah, it was a thing, like, they're literally like, oh yeah, do it, you know, because they wanted us all to watch their content. Certainly, you know, you had a certain number,
and now they want the money.
And now,
yeah.
I mean, it's.
I mean, you could see it coming.
But interestingly, none of the other streamers do that.
No.
Presumably it's not endemic with other streamers, to the best of my knowledge. I have no idea.
Do you ever share your password with anyone?
Do I share my password with anyone? My mum has access to my password. I'm not sure whether or not I should be announcing this on the podcast, but since Netflix are coming for her anyway,
she's,
I guess,
like,
it doesn't really matter.
There's a lot of episodes of Naked Attraction.
Yeah. Does your mum know you watch Naked
Funnily
Attraction?
Enough, well, she listens to this podcast, so.
Funnily enough, I do believe Naked Attraction is on Netflix.
Don't
episodes.
Tell him
I
that.
I think. I'm pretty sure.
Oh, there you go. I can watch them all.
See them. He's never going to get sleep now.
That's it. It's going to be Naked Attraction Marathon this weekend.
Yeah. Oh, God. And it's a bank holiday. He's got an extra day.
Three days of Naked Attraction. Come on.
Oh, God.
So I don't know. Like, I still don't understand quite how the password sharing thing is coming into effect. So as I say, we're recording this on the Thursday. I got an email from Netflix just kind of gently saying, hey, you know, passwords are for you and you alone, sort of thing. Okay,
did
great,
you?
Brilliant.
I didn't get that email.
Yeah, no, I got an email from them. And then obviously news stories are broken, but at no point has it been communicated to me what's going to happen.
What
to my mum, for example, who has my password. So, like, is
I
she...
I think she'll get special dispensation.
But what's going to happen? Like, are they going to, like, cut me off? Are people going to turn up at my house? Like, what's going to happen? Is their new chief action officer, Arnold Schwarzenegger, going to kick my door in? Knock, knock. I mean, like, you know... fork up some extra money? I don't know. How does it work?
I think they'll just lock her out.
You
and,
think?
And lock you out. Unfortunately,
they'll lock her out and meet up. Yeah. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah, both those things.
Okay, fair enough.
It'll be fine. I mean, we can just do this down the line with you, the podcast.
Yeah. It's fine. Yeah, I can do it remotely from prison.
Yeah. It's all good. Still have a post bag in there. You might even get some time to focus on the triage system.
Yeah, get some time to work on it. Oh, God. Okay, so those things happen. What else has been going on, Boydie?
Well, the BBC is had a big comedy festival this week in Sheffield, I believe. Hmm. I'm looking at Kay for confirmation
yes,
of that, because
yes,
I'm sure you get some of the same emails I do, but maybe not. And they've revealed that they've recommissioned, first of all, a lot of their comedies. So Bad Education will be back.
No brainer.
Yeah, no brainer, pretty much.
I was thinking of Sex Education there.
Oh, yeah. No, Bad Education, different show.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the show that Jack Whitehall co-created.
But now he's not in it, is he?
No. He was in the Christmas special of The Return, and now it's Leighton Williams and Charlie Wernham from the original cast are the main stars. I think, did we review it? Didn't we review it?
No, I don't think we did.
No? Oh, okay, fine. James is too busy checking his emails tonight. also recommissioned Avoidance.
Ramesh
Ranganathan, Kay and I's favourite comedian. Pretty
Ramesh Ranganathan, who loves your trainers, but refuses to plug this podcast.
He didn't refuse to. He was just talking about your trainers at the BAFTAs. It wasn't appropriate.
Could we just have it contractually written in that you must be referred to at all times as Pilot TV's Boyd Hill?
To be fair, he probably doesn't know you've got a podcast, does he?
Maybe not, He's a busy man.
I'll tell you what, he did know about the Basic Binges, is all I will say.
I bet he did.
And it's closure.
Could we get some kind of Supreme Pilot TV crossover clothing for you to wear to these events?
Yes. Oh, wow.
That's a great collab. That would be a good collab. So, yeah, his sitcom Avoidance will be back for a second series. Mandy, the Diane Morgan, the very funny.
Diane Morgan
can do no wrong. Peacock, do you remember that? That was the one with Sipa, Alan Mustafa, a.k.a. Sipa from People Just Do Nothing and The Curse. That was his one with personal trainer.
I did watch that.
Yeah, that's back. Ellie and Natasha, which is Ellie White and Natasha Dimitriou. Very, very brilliant.
Sketch show
with them. I was looking at James for confirmation he might even know who they are.
did you watch Stath Let's Flats?
I watched the first episode of season 2 of Stath Let's Flats while on holiday, because I thought we were reviewing it for this podcast. And then it turns out we were not reviewing it for this podcast.
Well, she's in that.
There's also some new stuff commissioned, including a thing called Ludwig, which stars David Mitchell as identical twins, I believe, and has quite a long storyline attached to it. Spent, which is Michelle de Swart. She's very talented in that.
I recognise the name. Why do I recognise it?
She was in that programme. His name I've forgotten.
Okay. I'll Google it.
Do you remember The Baby? And the mother.
Oh, God, yes.
Oh, yes. That's why I remember.
Yeah, okay. She's the star of that. She's in a show called Spent, playing a former catwalk model who's on the run. There's a show called Mammoth. I won't go through all of these because James will just get bored, particularly. And maybe the listeners will as well.
That ship may have sailed, but carry on.
I know. Charming.
How rude.
Absolutely charming. In fact, I'm going to stop there now.
Oh, boy, don't know.
No, I'm only joking.
There's a whole lot of swathe. There is a swathe. I could bang on all day. But there's a lot. But the good thing is, what I was going to say, is that the BBC is investing heavily in comedy.
Yeah, that's great.
That's great for me.
James doesn't understand, even though he actually does like quite a lot of comedies. And they've also announced a lot of shorts that have been made. Ricky Gervais has directed one, lots of different ways of young comedy talent to get on air, which is brilliant.
In the world of TV, it's a short, not just a film.
What? Say that again?
I was saying, in the world of TV, a short is surely just a film.
No, it's a short. I see what you're trying to do there, but no.
No, it just didn't work. Okay,
fine. Just
FYI, we'll
draw a veil over that.
That TV show of Michelle de Swart was actually called The Baby.
Oh, thank you. There you go.
I knew that.
You went far off. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was, BBC comedy, it's happening.
Okay, it's good. It's good. Any other news you want to share?
I have little news, but I...
So you didn't watch any TV and you've got no news, but otherwise we're good.
I was in Paris.
Oh my God, that was like days ago. Don't use that as an excuse.
I've been very busy and tired. Yeah, so Brian Cox did an interview with Amal Rajan, and he talked about success...
On the BBC.
on the BBC, yeah. BBC Two, to be precise.
Yeah.
And he talked about the end of Succession, and he was saying how he thought Logan's death would come later in the series. He felt it came too early. And then he was saying some other things. He was kind of speculating. He's like, oh, it'd be good, you know, that if Logan wasn't actually dead, and maybe this was like, you know, this could be a funny, not funny, but like it could be a way of seeing how the siblings, his perverse way of seeing how the siblings would react to his death.
Which is what I thought when we watched that episode.
This is what I thought, but actually, obviously, it's not going to be the case. But yeah, he was talking about that. So anyone who likes Succession and or Brian Cox, you should check that interview out.
But it does, I think it does, my suspicion I mentioned before that I think Brian Cox is turning into Logan Roy.
Yeah, you're saying this like from here, you would never say
no, I'd say it to him. I mean, in a funny way. I think actually he did another interview, and I'm sure I remember where I saw, where someone did kind of allude to that, and he kind of accepted it a bit, that, you know, when you play a character that dominant and that, you know, kind of completely extraordinary
alpha
character
male,
that is going to have some effect on you, you know, so I'm excusing myself. But the gradual quote is really fascinating. He said, regarding his death in episode 3, obviously, of this season, I was fine with it ultimately, but I did feel a little bit rejected. You know, I felt a little bit like all the work I've done and finally I'm going to, you know, end up as an ear on a carpet of a plane, which is the last shot probably we saw of him. And he also talked about how he secretly filmed the funeral ages ago, because they had to pretend it wasn't his funeral. So yeah, he attended the filming of that, which was fascinating to see, you know, kind of what it went on, to keep it all of a secret, which he said was also kind of quite poignant for him, I'm sure. But it is interesting that he does kind of vent, you know, in his way, in his kind of interestingly, like in the
he's
same way he did
honest,
about,
yeah. He? And I really like that because, yeah, I mean, of course you would feel rejected, but there are other actors who wouldn't admit that. And I love that he actually said that. And he feels sad that he was not giving longer on the show.
He basically does not give a shit who he annoys or offends, or, you know, might.
Because it's Brian Cox.
Because it's Brian Cox. And I also think, by the way, that the Succession gang, you know, I'm sure when I speak to, hopefully, director Mark Mylod early next week for this very podcast, are fine with it. They're like,
because it's Brian Cox.
Yeah,
like, you know. I mean, like, he said all that stuff about Jeremy Strong, and Jeremy was fine about it. And if anyone was going to get pissed off, because he did,
completely,
you know, he did go for it.
Yeah, so, which is a brilliant attitude to take, yeah. And I also think that, because I think he was reflecting a lot, probably what a lot of us thought when he did die in that third episode, which is that, oh my God, how can this show carry on, sustain another 7 episodes without the central dominant figure? And of course, it turned out to be absolutely brilliant. It turned out to be the masterstroke of masterstrokes, because not only was that third episode, and we can get into this in the spoiler special maybe for the whole series, but not only was that the most surprising point in the run for him to die, right? But it also, actually, the subsequent rest of this series, I think, has been transformed by that. Like, I think, you know, the effect it's had on the show has been kind of brilliant.
Which is what Jesse, I read something recently with Jesse saying, you know, that's why he wanted to do it so early in the series. He always planned to kill Logan off. When they realised this was going to be the last series, they knew it would happen. And he wanted to do it early in the series because he wanted to show how each of them would cope, the funeral, the, you know, the vying for the succession, etc. So,
completely. Yeah.
Now, how many complaints do you think we're going to get for spoiling the third episode of most recent season of Succession?
No, I think everyone will know by now that
are you serious?
You know,
Hey, I'm just saying.
I'll take it.
Which one of you is taking personal responsibility?
I mean, I get it a lot anyway, because I'm already the one who spoils things more than anyone. Sorry.
If you have any deliberate complaints, please address them to @BoydHilton and @KRibeiro.
Who in the world is a fan of Succession and is not, you know, so belated?
What if it's someone who's saving it up till it's finished and they want to watch it all in a big binge?
Well, in that case, can you put a thing on the thing? Description.
A thing on the thing?
Yes, telling people
James,
to
put a thing on the thing.
Bit.
Yeah, fair. I think that's fair.
Delete the whole conversation.
No.
You probably will.
No. Put a thing on a thing, and if you don't, then @JamesDyer.
What? How has this become my problem?
It's always your problem.
Oh my God.
You are the problem.
Just outrageous.
Yeah.
The only other thing I would mention, and again, I feel like I'm just repeating stuff from the Empire podcast, Pedro Pascal has finally confessed that it's not him in the Mandalorian armor. As if anyone for one second believed
that
it was.
That had been keeping me up, actually. So
I thought it would
have
been. There you go. Exclusively revealed.
Whatever. I mean,
well, not anymore.
Sometimes.
It's basically now a voice acting role.
Yeah, because did you actually think he was in it?
No, I always said he wasn't. But it was because he maintained the pretense that he was in the armor.
But when he was, wasn't he?
So he says, yes.
Okay, just saying.
So he says.
Okay.
Anyway, that's news. We're done with news.
Well done.
Excellent. Let's move on to this week's reviews. Oh, God. Right. And
Spoiler alert.
But I'm going to have to say I'm sort of on his way.
No.
First up, just for Kate, we have Deadlock on Prime Video, an Australian comedy from Kate McCartney and Kate McLennan, which is a local man turn up dead and naked in the town of Deadlock, Tasmania, only for a brash detective from the mainland to turn up and run roughshod over the case. Boydie, would you give a Castlemaine 4X for this?
That's a good one, James. Yeah.
8 out of 10 for the intro. Extraordinarily, so this is created by two women called Kate and stars a third woman called Kate Box, who plays the kind of local detective who is in a relationship with...
I think you find she's a senior sergeant.
Oh, okay, thank you. She's in a relationship with her female lover who gets annoyed.
Yeah,
who's a vet and gets annoyed that she's still detecting, and she's promised to stop detecting, to carry on being a policewoman. But when they discover the body of a local man naked on the nearby beach...
That's not a spoiler, boy. That's within
this
the first...
This is the premise.
This is the setup. It's literally the first scene. Yeah. Although it does contain a very fun line, which involves a cigarette.
Yeah. Isn't the first scene the two women shagging, I think?
Is it?
I think so. I remember
them setting someone's dick on fire in the first scene, but maybe it was the second scene.
It was either one or first or second, which I can't remember which way around. You should take notes, obviously.
It was the first scene.
Now, I have to say, I was very much enjoying the show. Right, to start with.
Uh-huh.
Hear me out. Hold on. I can feel... This is why I don't like spoilers. This is why, listeners, we have this agreement. We don't discuss what we think of any of the shows until we record.
Yeah.
Because I feel it does constrict you. And, I mean, this goes back to, you know, Terry. Always used to, like, you'd be fully aware of what she thought of a show seconds within her watching it, one way or another. And I think because we shouldn't feel constricted if we like a show or don't like a show.
Yeah,
so anyway, I was very much... I enjoyed this show to start with. I thought Kate Box was brilliant. I thought the relationship of the two women was very completely authentic and believable and plausible. I thought the mystery of a naked man who was like a local football star, who was much admired and regarded by everyone in the town, naked there for all to see, was an intriguing mystery. He's got a dodgy brother who's really horrible, and you're like, you know, he's the obvious prime suspect, but you're not sure whether he will be or not is the prime suspect, whether it should be someone else. I was enjoying the general, and the tone of it is like a comedy crime drama where the comedy all comes from the characters, right? And they're all kind of quite interesting, some of them kind of quite big. And then in the middle of the first episode, the detective arrives, played by Madeline Sammy, Detective Eddie Redcliffe, and she is...
Yeah.
A lot.
Yes.
And I'd say she's
unbearable.
Okay, I do feel that that the whole thing gets derailed by her, because she arrives like this just force of nature, and you're supposed to be, the whole point of her is that she's over the top, larger than life character who kind of drives into this situation with these local police and takes over the investigation, decides who's the main suspect should be without any evidence whatsoever, breaking all the rules of normal police etiquette. And she's funny, and she's supposed to be funny, and it's supposed to be a comedy. Now, this is, we're getting to an interesting genre discussion, I'm sure, any minute now.
Was it
James.
Tonally uneven, Boyd?
Well, it was, in the sense that it was going very well, being quite funny and quite well observed and yet plausible, until she arrives. And for me, it just went off the rails then, because she was just too much. And I just thought, I can understand what they're trying to do, but she's just completely implausible. I just don't think she'd get away with being that mad in the middle of leading an investigation. That was my issue with it. I was enjoying it until she arrived, and then I was a bit like, oh no, I don't think this is working anymore. But it sounds like you didn't even like it to start with.
I was really excited about this because, as you know, I'm going through a very Australian comedy flex with Calling From Account. So I was very, you know, I was thinking, great, you know, but I just...
Bonza,
this,
in fact.
I was thinking, I was going to do an Australian accent.
No,
I was very excited for it. Anyway, it's just not in the same league for me. And I just...
I mean, it's very different.
Yeah, it's different. But I just think it's like, it is packed with comedy, but I just think the sort of hit ratio isn't high enough. I didn't find it as funny as I was hoping I would. I think the drama, like, I wasn't particularly gripped by the mystery. I agree that, you know, it did get that character that you're talking about, the detective that comes in, she is just OTT and she's too much. And they sort of overplay their hand. But even before that, I wasn't particularly in love with this at all. And I found it a slog to get through because it's an hour long as well. I think it should be shorter. Definitely.
I could tell you were having all these feelings. Funnily enough, when James said earlier, what was he said there about Airplane? When you said, you know, talking about tonal shifts. Yeah. For me, this is a bit like, it goes, to start with, it's one thing and it's like a mildly amusing comedy crime thing. Yeah. And then it does turn almost into Airplane with the arrival of that character of Eddie, who is so over the top.
Yeah.
She could literally be on that plane hitting, you know, smacking people in the face.
It goes from being, you know, a quite dry at times Australian comedy to what feels like a sketch show. Like, it's just really overblown, like slap you around the face with a wet fish kind of comedy.
Yeah.
And I not to sound like a massive twat, but I kind of tolerated the first half of it. Like, I didn't love it, but it was fine. Like, it was okay. Mm. But yes, as soon as she arrives, I just was like, oh, fuck off. I just, no.
Yeah.
Just, again, it's just, it's not my sense of humor. I can't be dealing with this. And I found her so aggravating.
I don't think it was anyone's. I don't think it's funny, though. I don't think she's funny.
Well, see, it's hard for me to gauge because often when I'm watching this, is this funny or is it just me? I don't, you know, it's hard.
But I read this thing. So I did find this a slog and I was like, oh God, is this just me? I wanted to know more about it. And I read that the two Kates, who are the showrunners and producers, were inspired to write this, like a comedy, after watching Broadchurch, and that the working title of the project was Funny Broadchurch. And I think that's very ambitious. And I don't
Funny Broadchurch.
That makes sense. Yeah, I mean,
haven't succeeded.
I mean, the body's literally found on the beach.
Yeah.
And it does use the locale, you know, fairly well. And it's nicely shot, actually. It looks good. But yeah, I think the problem is, in order to make it funny,
I don't think it's funny enough.
That main character needs to be toned down and or rethought. because I think it's
fine to have her. I just think not to the nth degree. I mean, she's really just extreme.
She's annoying. She's annoying rather than funny. That is the problem. She's supposed to be annoying, you know, but some people will probably find her funny. I think it seems like all three of us found her annoying, right? Which is rare.
We're in agreement about comedy, especially.
She is annoying. Yeah. But do you know what? I might actually watch the second episode just to kind of, I don't know.
Yeah, do, because I'd like to know if it gets better.
Let us know if she becomes less annoying.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, well, Deadlock, which comes to her Prime Video, Boydie, when?
Friday, 2nd of June.
There you go, well done. Got it in one. Okay, good. That's that. Next up this week, we have White House Plumbers on Sky, a show that is not, as may first appear to be the case, about fixing the president's waterworks, but is in fact a satirical political drama based on the 2007 book Integrity by Egil Crowe and concerns the team behind the Watergate scandal. Gay, were you bowled over? I don't know, some kind of toilet metaphor. Did this tank? Did you like it? Tell us.
Yeah, I think it tanked for me. Like I said, I was maybe a bit grumpy this week. I just, it's an interesting story, of course. And I listened to a podcast recently on it and and it's got great names. So Woody Harrelson's in it as E. Howard Hunt, and Justin Theroux's in it as Gordon Liddy, Nixon's political saboteurs who are accidentally topple the presidency while trying to protect it. So, I mean, it's a very interesting story, but I don't know. I just couldn't get on board with it. I don't know if it's a combination of Woody Harrelson's weird accent thing he was putting on, the depth they go into the lives of these former FBI agents. I just found it quite hard going. And a little boring?
Yes.
What about you?
So it's interesting. I was really looking forward to this show because I'm a huge fan of...
As we know from watching
Watergate-based Watergate-based dramas, Washington Behind Closed Doors. There was also another drama recently called Gaslit, which was on what used to be called Stars Play, and now, I believe now is known as Lionsgate Plus, which I think had Julia Roberts in it, from memory, is playing like the wife of one of these people, and pretty much had the same characters, in fact. Do you remember?
I remember the show, yeah.
And I'm a huge fan of Justin Theroux and Woody Harrelson, but particularly a fan of Justin Theroux's dog.
Yes,
heavily featured on his Instagram, who is one of the greatest Instagram accounts of all time. Yeah. Justin Theroux's dog, look it up. Is it Cobra? I think something like that. Anyway, and Justin Theroux put a lot of photos of him in this show up on his Instagram, and you know, I think they filmed it like a year ago at least. And the whole idea of it, I thought, was interesting, taking a kind of a wryly, funny look at this whole thing. And the whole idea of it is like it's a bit like a Very English Scandal, you know, in taking a kind of jaunty comedic take on a big historical scandal. And I'm in fully in favour of that kind of thing normally. Oh my God, for most case plays, literally. Could
no,
not...
sorry. Should I tell you why? Because as you were talking, I was like, I know that was the intention, but I just don't find it funny.
Well, I'm not, I don't disagree. Yeah. I don't disagree. But your face was a picture just now. That was like,
yeah. That was awful. Sorry.
No, it was brilliant. If only the listeners could have seen,
yeah,
should have taken
a picture.
It's a shame
for them.
Again, this started fine for me. I thought they're introducing the characters. It's, you know, it's basically a satire on blowhard Republican right-wing quasi-fascist people fascinated by Hitler. I mean, at one point there was an amazing scene.
Oh my God!
Watch
yeah.
Hitler's speeches
yeah,
and stuff. Yeah, that was a lot. But fair enough. There's a very funny scene where they're on a private jet and. And, yeah, you know, the scene. Is it Justin or Woody? Which one of them plays the organ and sings a song? Sings a Frank Sinatra.
It's Woody Harrelson.
Woody Harrelson. Thank you. And that was really funny. And by the way, I read up on this. All of these amazing scenes happen.
Oh yeah.
I mean, that is extraordinary.
And they say that clearly at the start, don't they?
Yeah, there's a disclaimer in it. It says that even though everyone's been found guilty of whatever they did leading up to the Watergate.
Yes, it also says the names have not been changed.
Yeah, the
mainly because almost everyone was found guilty.
Right, exactly. Fair enough. But I do think it's fascinating. They had a lot of incredibly juicy detail that they do use as the basis for this drama. Another fact that E. Howard Hunt, the Woody Harrelson character, is a prolific author of all of these books, thrillers.
Yeah. Is he?
Yes.
Oh, he was.
You know, there's a bit where his wife early on says,
writing up a book.
Yeah, she's typing them up. Yeah. He genuinely did write like 75 novels or something.
Wow.
Yeah. Extraordinary. His wife, played by Lena Headey, by the way, from Game of Thrones.
It's got a great cast.
Great cast.
It does have a great cast.
Great cast.
Yeah.
Donald Gleeson. But after, again, halfway through the first episode, it did get bogged down in quite tedious detail of what they were trying to do and how they were doing it.
Yeah.
And while there are moments where they're bumbling, I mean, they just do stupid stuff like take photos of each other in ridiculously terrible disguise.
Yeah.
But again, all these things did happen, which is essentially brilliant. But I ended up... Because it does, I tell you what, every single show this week, slight spoiler alert, even for me, the one thing they all have in common is they're just too long.
Mm-hmm.
So, oh my God, that's my thing.
Yeah,
all of them this week are flabby.
I do think that the other, what's the one we just reviewed called? Deadlock.
Deadlock.
Could have been half hour episodes.
Yep. Yes,
would have been
and
more
should have been.
Digestible. This just needs to be fewer episodes than it is, clearly, because halfway through this, it just got bogged down in the detail and was a bit boring. I think there are 5 episodes altogether, and it just did get a bit repetitive and tedious.
Did you not find, again, I hate to be like the tone police, but I felt a little bit like with this, like it takes itself too seriously to be an out-and-out comedy, but it feels far too broad to be taken seriously.
I wouldn't.
Because you say like a lot of these things, like they're actual, like these things actually happened. It's like if they're actually
they're all milked for laughs.
But yeah, but the characters are so overblown.
Yeah.
In the way they're performed.
Yeah.
And I have to be said, like I swear to God, every person in this is in a different show. Like the in between the characters, it's so bizarre.
What do you mean?
The way they're playing their performances. Their performances are mannered in very different ways. It feels like they're all in separate comedies. So I feel like their renditions of these characters baffled me slightly. But I thought I didn't find it funny. I found it quite irritating.
Yeah.
And I almost wanted them to eject the comedy and stick with the drama.
Because
it's an interesting story.
Because it's so interesting.
Yeah. But I found that they were playing it so ridiculously that I just got irritated most of the way through.
Do you know what? I hate to say it, but I absolutely agree with James.
You said two different, slight different things there, though. I agree that they're all playing it for. I think they're all playing it for love.
Oh yeah, no, they are.
But you said there were different.
But oftentimes in different ways, like at two different levels. Like you get one person who's massively overblown, another person who's ever so slightly funny, and then this one's actually quite dramatic. Like, I feel there's a really broad range of like tones of the way they're playing these characters.
That wasn't my issue with it. I don't mind the fact that they are milking it for laughs, and that was the whole premise, and I quite like that. I just think it just gets bogged down in too much detail. You know,
that is true.
That's the problem with it. I think they are certainly Harrelson, the two of them, and Theroux are in the same thing. They're bouncing off each other, and it's taking a completely like satirical slash comedic look at right wing Republican blowhards. So I don't think the tone was the problem. I think I just think it wasn't, once you've established that tone, unlike A Very English Scandal, you know, for example, it just, the storytelling just needs to be more precise and finely honed and not as just end up being as dull as this.
I agree that there's too much detail, but actually I just think I'd prefer it as a drama.
Yeah.
I would prefer it as a documentary.
Yes.
I want to see, you know, that would be entertaining to see, you know, to see all these things. And I think there have been a kind of a various documentaries about this thing, but it didn't sustain the whole thing. It reminded me a bit of Vice, you know, the Adam McKay film about...
Well, I enjoyed Vice, actually, but...
Yeah, but that's a similar tone, which I think, which you know, I had certain issues with Vice, yeah, Christian Bale as Dick Cheney, etc. Mm. But it felt very influenced by that, yeah. I just think in the end, it's just, it could have been, if it'd been like, you know, a two-parter or three-parter, it probably wouldn't have been better. That's the main problem for me.
White House Promise, then, which lands on, I'm going to say Sky Atlantic, and now?
Yes.
When, Boydie?
Tuesday the 13th
on
of May.
On Tuesday. Finally, this week, we have the latest knockabout comedy from renowned entertainment lol merchant Shane Meadows. This three-part series is adapted from the novel of the same name by Benjamin Myers. It tells the story of David Hartley, played by Michael Socha, who assembles a gang of weavers and land workers to fight back at the onset of the Industrial Revolution. Boydie, what did you think of the gallows pole?
You know what's weird is your whole intro to this is a take on, is a joke about how it's not funny. And yet actually it is funny.
Yeah.
So that's the weird thing.
It is funny, James.
Is it? Yeah.
Is it?
In all honesty, did you make it all the way through?
Make it all the way through.
Well,
yes.
So
yes.
Just for an example,
yeah.
There's the scene between Michael Socha and his ex-girlfriend who's been kept waiting 7 years.
Yes.
Well, that scene with just the two of them.
Well, just the two of them, which is totally a comedic scene.
I think that's the best scene.
It's a comedic scene.
It's a fantastic scene.
But it is.
I mean,
tell me you got that it was.
I mean,
she won't let him walk past her, and that's the whole thing.
Sure.
Right,
sure. I genuinely, by that point, it had lost me.
Right, but you framing this as like a work of misery is just completely misleading. Because
it's definitely not his most miserable thing he's ever done. I would give you that.
Thank you. For him,
this is basically a Carry On film.
I might have to kind of bring Terry White in from you know because of course she's a huge Shane Meadows fan, probably maybe the world's biggest Shane Meadows. I'm a Shane Meadows fan as well, to be honest. But she isn't one of Shane Meadows' films or favorite film of all time. Pretty much. And I think this is England's one of her favourite TV shows of all time. And This Is England by the TV series, certainly. All of his stuff has humour in it, by the way. I mean, some of it is out and out funny. So your whole depiction of him is, I think, if I was Terry White, I'd say classist as well. Just because, you know, just a bit of working class, you know, reality is regarded by James Dyer as something miserable.
We know he's a middle class snob.
Yeah, we know he's a middle class twat. Snob. What's interesting about this is, this really does have tonal shifts. I mean, there's this epically long, slow motion introduction to the main character, Michael Socha, trudging along the moors, the Yorkshire moors.
For what seems like about 20 minutes.
I mean, it does. I agree with you. It's extraordinary, the start of this show. And you know, the funny thing about this is, if ever a show says, I remember when there was a screening of this at the BFI a couple of weeks ago, and I was thinking, oh yeah, I know that. It's coming soon. You know, it's an event when Shane Meadows does a TV show or a film or whatever. And I was thinking, oh, is that going to be on BBC One or BBC Two? Honestly, once you see the opening scene, this is BBC Two. I mean, you know, it could never be on BBC One. It's such a kind of... frankly pretentious, certainly unbelievably long first scene in slow motion.
Slow burn.
And you're not, what the fuck is going on? He's trudging through the moors, clutching a bag of stuff with these freaky guys in masks.
Oh, yeah,
can I just say, when it got to that bit, first I thought, oh my God, I think I'm out, because it very reminiscent of Yellow Jackets. You know, wearing those weird skulls.
Well, Yellow Jacket's slowed down by a thousand. It's just like, okay. And then you get the title sequence. So that is quite a kind of heavyweight, serious thing. He's basically dying from a wound and he's hallucinating or whatever the fuck's going on in massive slow motion.
This is not a spoiler.
No. This is the very first scene, again, emphasize. Absolutely extraordinary introduction to the thing. I'm borderline... indulgent. I mean, some might say actually indulgent. James, for example.
Sure.
Right? Then it goes into the title sequence, which is play for laughs. The title sequence, all the titles are like the great directorial...
No, I've got one here. They're all in sort of like Old English. So Guardian of the Travelling Lamp.
Right. It was the lighting,
Genuinely, it felt like they'd gone full Python that point.
Shane Meadows is referred to as purveyor of scenes. Now, that's funny.
Yeah, it is. Right? It is funny.
Then he arrives, then the show itself starts, and it's like... like it kind of does alternate almost between scenes that are funny, like the one we mentioned with him and his ex slash girlfriend,
aimed to be funny, can we say?
Well, I think genuinely funny. Okay, I thought that was a funny scene. No, yeah, that was a funny scene.
Yeah.
But there are other bits of it that are completely not funny in any way at all. So, but what it does have is, so the even then, the tonal shift between the titles, which revert to old English stuff thing, and then the actual dialogue is completely modern.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly.
Absolute swearing. There are more fucks in this show than anything I can think of recently. Mm. Literally every other line is someone saying, like,
there
this.
Was a bit where I swear I could have been watching The Witchfinder, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it just, like, where they're just, exactly, you say, the swearing and the kind of the vernacular that they use.
It's completely in the vernacular.
Yeah.
And then eventually you get, I mean, I only know the premise of the show because I read the press release.
Same here.
If you hadn't, these are real people. Mm-hmm. Michael Socha's character is a real guy who led a kind of criminal endeavor to manufacture fake coins. That's what happened. And that's what the original novel that's based on told that story.
Yeah.
This drama is a prequel to what's covered in the novel, but you also wouldn't know that that's what it's about all from this first episode.
Well, I had to look up the plot after I'd watched the episode.
Right. So I was thinking, this is bewildering if you haven't read the press release, but I had read the press release because I wrote a preview of it. And so I almost don't know what to think of it. I enjoyed it. Enjoy is the right word. I found parts of it frustrating. I found it pretentious, self-indulgent.
Yeah.
Certainly the most self-indulgent thing Shane Meadows has ever done, because Shane Meadows generally is known for like very accessible, kind of funny / tragic, very emotional stuff. Like, This Is England is an amazingly, it's nothing like this at all. This is definitely his weirdest thing he's ever done.
Yeah. Right? And can we talk about the music and the end titles?
The music. Oh, but there are entire songs that the woman sings in the
I could definitely lose those.
Oh my God, I could have definitely lost that.
Yeah.
This is an over. We got a message from James, listeners, when after saying it's feature length.
It's 1 hour and 12 minutes.
Right, it's
the first episode.
1 hour and 12 minutes. It just doesn't need to be that extra 12 minutes. You could easily at least
lose a couple of songs and you're done.
Lose a couple of songs. Even the scene which I really liked between the Michael Fisher and the lover could have been shorter. That went on. The scenes go on.
I disagree. I would rather watch that than the woman singing rather than the walk in the beginning. But
what I'm saying is, it could have been tightened up a lot.
Yeah, of course.
He's been given.
Just by playing the first 5 minutes at regular speed.
Right, that's true. So I really enjoyed a lot of it. I was fascinated by it, even when it was like completely being weird. I think it is undoubtedly self-indulgent and too long. And I don't know why anyone didn't just go, you could easily fit it into an hour, Shane. Just cut these things.
They're scared.
Because they're probably scared. Because he is a bit of a genius and has a reputation for being a genius, quite rightly. But if it had just been, a bit tighter.
Even a genius needs to be reined in.
100%, I agree. Yeah, if it was just a bit tighter, then I think it would have been brilliant. As it is, it's like flawed but fascinating.
And a little flabby.
Yeah.
I agree with everything you said. I just think it took me a little while to adjust to this, right? Because I love a period drama, right? But it's a period drama with a really contemporary feel. So the dialogue, the language, the fact that, I don't know if this is right, I talked to James about this yesterday, spoiler alert, we did break the rules.
Oh my God, how dare you?
I know. And do you know what he actually said? Don't tell Boydo.
About the conversation.
Yeah, don't tell him we broke the first rule of the podcast.
He actually came over to me and acted. I said, oh no, we can't. He goes, don't worry, Boyd's not here.
Jesus Christ.
But David Hartley, who's played by Michael Socha, is it Socha?
Socha, I think.
Has gold teeth. And I was like, he's this poor, you know, impoverished guy. Would he have gold teeth in the, when is it set? The 1760s in West Yorkshire?
He's been away, isn't he, doing his own thing. doing some. I think he's been making money on the sly, criminally. And I think I think that is plausible.
Oh, so he would. Okay, fine. But yes, I agree with everything you said. I just think it was too long, should have been tightened up. But the thing I loved most about it is the David and Grace, played by Daisy from Downton, so Sophie McShearer, is that?
Sophie McShearer, yes, I should have mentioned, yes, absolutely. Yeah.
And I thought those scenes at the end were fantastic and they were so emotionally sort of charged and intense that for me, that the whole thing like was not saved because it was a decent drama and everything, but like I just, when I got to that bit, I was like, oh, okay, yeah, I'm invested in these two characters, I want to see where this goes.
Yeah, and it has got incredible. Thomas Turgoose, who's a Shane Meadows regular, is brilliant in it. I love him. Yeah. He plays the brother.
There is a bit where they're having a 5-minute conversation about stabbing. And I was just like,
yeah.
Oh, God. And then Daisy from Downton has like a scene in an alleyway.
Oh, yeah.
And I was saying to Kate, like, this is improv, right?
Because there's a lot of improv, yeah.
Because, and I was getting, because it felt heavily improv. Because they just say, I'm going to go. Are you going to go? I might go. Are you gonna, if you don't go, you're not going to be able to see him. Well, I might go now. And I was like, oh, go or don't go, but fucking shut up about it. I was like, improv all you like, but cut that scene for the love of Christ. I just,
I hate this when this happens, but I absolutely do agree with James.
No, you're absolutely right. I meant to say that. It is heavily improvised. There's a whole array of interviews with Shane Meadows. They're working on this. He cast them like a year before, I think, they filmed it and got them to, like, you know, kind of get
and
to know
and captured it all in real time.
You're right. There is some obvious improvisational scenes, which again should have been shorter.
Yes.
It's
the scene he's talking about there with Daisy and that other woman discussing whether Daisy would go into a room or not was exactly how he described it.
Do you know what the problem is as well? I did really enjoy, but I enjoyed it much more definitely than James did.
Yeah, it's a great surprise.
But I do think the problem with that level of improvisation is you can tell that those stuff is improvised. It's got that, there's something about it, which I know he's always had improvisation, Shane Meadows, in his stuff, but this is England, you couldn't tell.
It feels organic, right? It feels organic, and in the scene was here. It felt a little bit like, you know, the improv scenes in Barry when they're on stage. It felt a little awkward.
Yes, exactly. Well, I agree.
Like
I do agree about that.
Yeah.
And I think that's even true of the scene with the funny scene between the two of them. You can tell it's like they've come up with this bit, you know, where she doesn't want him to walk past her. And I think it's slightly contrived. Particularly, there's something about doing... It is unlike any period drama you've ever seen. And we will say that.
Oh, yeah.
But... It's because it is period drama. I think it adds to the awkwardness of the improvised stuff. Do you know what I mean? It's just all a bit. Mm. So I'm fascinated by it, but in the end, it might be like too flawed. For its own good. Yeah.
Well, clearly I didn't enjoy this.
No.
But honestly, you don't want to hear me moaning.
But it's not that grim. That's not the problem.
No, it's
but
not,
it's
no.
dour. Like, it's long and dour and long and weird and long and boring. And did I mention it's long? But
we have Shane Meadows coming up in a spoiler special.
Yes. And our next guest, Shane Meadows.
Look, James rolls.
Yeah. No one, that is true. That would be that with the curveball you weren't expecting. Here's Shane Meadows.
He would slag it off. And next week we have Shane. And it's like, oh God, who's going to do that interview?
No, I'm just going to say right here, right now, no one needs me to talk about how on so many levels this is absolutely not for me. Instead, I'm going to do you one better. And instead of hearing me talk about it, let's hear from someone far better positioned to talk about the output of Shane Meadows, having prepared a special reaction just for our loyal listeners.
Jerry.
I hand over to our official Shane Meadows correspondent, the one and only Terry White.
Perfect.
Hello, Pilot Podcast. Hello, James, Boydie and Kay. Thank you for inviting me on. And I would normally say, fuck no, as I've said a couple of times to James Dyer recently, because you'll remember last time I was on this podcast, I swore I would not be back because who wants to be David Brent in the office turning up with my dog, begging people to go for a drink or begging people to hear my opinions on a TV show. But I was concerned when it came to Shane Meadows, when it came to the gallows pole, that it may not get a fair shot. Obviously, you've got Bordie and Kay there to do the business. But anybody who has listened to Pilot for a while or read Empire during my tenure will know how I feel about Shane Meadows and about his work. But this is a very different proposition. 18th century period piece set in West Yorkshire, which may not seem that different to the Midlands in the 80s and 90s, and certainly James Dyer thinks anything north of Watford is just the north. But it's a fairly different proposition, and I'm just going to cut to the chase and say I loved it. I think it's a Shane Meadows piece through and through. You've got the naturalism, the realism. He's created, I think, the most real period characters who've ever been created. They won't necessarily be period characters that you recognise. They aren't kind of just the posh people and the poor, downtrodden people. They are a community of people in the Calder Vale who essentially turn to counterfeiting because their industry and their community has been decimated. And what he does, which is what he does in all of his things, is he is more adept at anybody than bringing real life people and not just their concerns to screen, but their love, their sense of community, their sense of hope. There's a bit in a pub, and it's just like when the gang were in the pub in This Is England, because what Shane understands is the bonds of community and the bonds of people and neighbours and families. And that's what you get in this. There's Stagmen, it's fairly psychedelic, there's Visions. Michael Socker is the lead, David Hartley, who was the incredible Harvey in This Is England. And he was kind of, you know, this supporting guy, a hard-faced skinhead. But actually, there were some real glimpses, especially in the TV shows, about just what Michael Socker could do. And there was some, especially kind of 86, 88, it was clear that his, you know, his dad was a bully, he was hard-faced because he was having to protect his mum and his sister. There were scenes where he turned up with a black eye and a cut lip, and there was a real kind of vulnerability behind that steel. And he really kind of comes to life in this lead role. I mean, Shane obviously saw something really special in him, and he's great, and he's alongside Sophie McShearer, who more than holds her own as David's ex-girlfriend, Grace. Thomas Turgoose is in it as well, from This Is England, who plays his brother, William. And I really must shout out Stevie Binns, who plays the local landlady and is one of the most natural actors I've ever seen. She's actually somebody who is a complete newcomer, because Shane and Shaheen Baig, who is his amazing casting director, do that incredible thing they always do, which is bring on seasoned actors and complete newbies from the local community. And so what you get is a real community. You get the sense of a real gang of people. And the thing I love most about it, finally, just to say, is this for me was one of the most hopeful Shane Meadows pieces I've ever seen. You know, people often focusing on the violence and the bleakness and, you know, the fact that it can be quite hard to watch. And Shane's power is in his commitment to unflinching depictions of trauma, but also tenderness and love. And for me, what this piece is really about is not about brutality and violence and all of that. It's about the hope of a community coming together, the hope of ordinary people to build a life for themselves that they love. And, you know, there are loads of echoes with modern day and what we're going through with cost of living. And he doesn't shy away from any of that. But I think he always resists turning working class people into stereotypes. And this is another kind of proof of that. And it is, unlike any period drama you will have ever seen and will likely see again. Some people, period purists, let's call them, may not like that, because sometimes they speak in language that's got modern references in it. But it kind of doesn't matter at all, because what you get is real believable people. It's also funny as fuck. Really, really, really funny. There's a bit where the Stagman calls Michael Socker's character a lazy bastard. And it's just, and he goes, nice. And it's just really funny, these little kind of exchanges they have, because it's mainly improvised. I, as you can probably tell, I fucking loved it. I really, really loved it. And so really, all that's left to say is, James Dyer is almost certainly wrong. I have no idea what he said. I have no idea what he's already recorded, but I think it's a safe bet. Watch it for yourself. Just watch it without preconception and see what you think. And then we can all join together in singing a song I like to call James Dyer Who's Wrong? James Dyer is wrong. There's loads of verses of it, but those are the only words. Thank you for letting me come back on and rant and rave, literally, about Shane Meadows. It was a blast. I promise this is the last you'll hear from me. Otherwise, you're perfectly entitled to sit me next to a pregnant woman who says, nobody wants to go for a drink with you. Nobody likes you. You don't even work here. Thank you, Pilot.
You're Maverick.
Yeah,
today.
You're Maverick.
Absolutely, he's canon.
I would expect that, yeah. I wouldn't expect the bloody poll.
There you go. I like to keep you guessing. I like to keep you guessing. There you
I
go.
Remember Terry told you there was a screening of it. That screening, I was talking, I think it made me at BAFTA, in fact, not the BFI. And it was the night of a big football match that I went to. And she was like, I'm going to go to this screening.
I texted her when I first started, just with an image of just him walking at the beginning. And I just said, kill me. And she went, I've seen all of them. She said, you're going to hate it.
Wow. That's brilliant.
But yes. So yeah, that was Terry. And if you, after all that, wish to watch the Gallows poll, you can do so on BBC Two on which day, Boydie?
Wednesday, the 31st of May, my mother's birthday.
On Boydie's mum's birthday, yeah. You can
Happy
watch
birthday,
the Gallows. Will
H.
she be watching the Gallows poll on her birthday?
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
No. I mean, maybe. But at 9 o'clock. She'd probably enjoy it more than you. As would every other human in the world.
Oh, God. Right. So first of all, we should say what else is out this week before we get on to anything else. So what else is out this week?
We've got the Alan Carr sitcom.
Now, are we going to do that on Pilot Plus? We have yet to
decide. Yeah, we haven't decided. We'll tell you what the
choice is. What are our options? Give me options.
We could get the listeners to vote. Have we got time? Is that going to
I don't think we've got time because this will go out after we've recorded it. No, it won't. Yes, it will.
We can tweet.
No, it won't.
Anyway, let's not complicate things.
Sorry.
Let's pick one.
The choices are Changing Ends, the Alan Carr comedy,
right,
based on his own childhood being brought up by his dad, who was the manager of the local football team. A proper football team.
Feels like I won't enjoy it.
But it feels like you won't enjoy it.
We can't be dictated.
No, I know.
If it's less than an hour and 12 minutes, it's already onto a winner.
It's half an hour, so
suddenly he's in.
I'm in.
And the other, that Nacho, which is a Lionsgate Plus series, which is all about a genuine real life Spanish porn star with a large
given his penchant for naked attraction, I think we know which way this is going.
True. Yes. And all I'll say is, having watched this show, it's quite something.
Okay.
And also, it's a foreign drama.
It's a Spanish drama, Spanish language drama. That's on Friday on Lionsgate Plus. Changing Ends is on Thursday on the ITVX. Other stuff this week, a Black Lady sketch show is back for its fourth season, I think, on Sky Comedy now on Tuesdays. That's a really funny show, actually. And I think that might be, actually. I think that for major shows, yeah. So, but the big question is Alan Carr versus...
So one of these we will pick for Pilot Plus.
Carr okay. versus Porn Nacho. Carr.
Yeah, so Alan Carr versus Porn Star. Right, we'll pick one of those. And for Pilot Plus subscribers, we'll be reviewing that on Thursday, as well as, presumably, talking about the finales for everything this week. We might talk the Barry finale. We might talk the Succession finale. We might talk the Ted Lasso finale. Oh, the Yellow Jackets finale. There's another finale. There's four finales this week.
Do you remember, because I mentioned a couple of weeks ago that it was the most extraordinary week for finales.
Yeah. It's going to be a lot of finale chat. We are, to be fair, I should say, like, we are going to have specials for some of these as well, but we'll have a little bit of a quick chat on Pilot Plus. If you do not already subscribe to Pilot Plus, why the hell not? Since you can do so. In fact, what can people buy for £2? Okay.
You literally cannot buy anything really nowadays for £2.
Certainly not in London.
No. So this
is
an absolute bargain.
Like a small packet of crisps.
You could buy a small packet of crisps, maybe, but not from a train station.
They're not going to be your vegetable cut ones you like. They're just not going to be like...
Who has vegetable crisps?
What are you talking about? I was
making him sound fancier than this.
Oh, right,
the
little potpourri crisps.
Yeah, is this a real crisp?
I don't even like those crisps.
No, nobody does. No, so you can't do anything. And, you know, Famouses have said to Boyd that we should be charging more money. It is so cheap. It is such a bargain. Yeah. There is no excuse for you not to sign up now. It is £1.99 a month for all of those goodies. Do go to empireonline.com/pilottv and sign up now. And of course, don't forget to vote, to rock the vote for the long, long anticipated and not in any way just pulled out of my arse greatest TV poll.
Oh my God, I hope
which
not.
Which you can vote.
A poll out of his arse? I hope not.
A gallows poll. If you can vote at empireonline.com/, I think I said it was best TV voting. So yeah, maybe go there as well.
Making it up on the spot.
I am. I'm just winging it this week.
I mean, he's so maverick today.
Yeah, I am. Yeah. I've gone particularly maverick.
Too much caffeine.
We'd probably have to choose a pick of the week. Though, quite frankly, my pick of the week would be to do anything other than watch television. But
wow,
I'm going to choose. No, we have to agree on one, and I'm going to choose Gallows Park.
What is wrong with you?
What would you rather dead?
I swear to God, if I had to rewatch one of the shows from this week,
which one would it be?
It would be Deadlock. That is the one that I dislike the least. It's also possibly the shortest.
Rewatch, but it's more the question, what are you going to carry on watching?
None of them.
I know.
Under any circumstances.
If it was carry on watching, I'd carry on watching Gallows Pole.
Yeah, same.
Well, it's, the second instalment, you realise, is also going to be over an hour
long.
No,
it's only about an hour five.
I know.
Oh, fine, so you get 10 minutes back.
It is insistently longer than an hour, though. The BBC must have been like, what the fuck? Why can you just do it to an hour?
James, are you honestly telling me you want to have another instalment of that annoying detective?
No, no, I absolutely do not. But I would rather watch that detective running around at normal speed than watch fucking Lawrence Sosha's brother trudging through a marsh and in slow motion at 1 mile an hour.
Lawrence Sosha's brother.
Yeah, he doesn't even get his name.
Listen, don't be a dick. Are off. Do not be a dick.
The gloves are off. Hope Michael's listening.
Yeah.
No disrespect to Michael Sosha, who I think is an excellent performer.
Yeah, don't try and backtrack. Beep. James obviously refreshing.
I simply enjoy him more at normal speed. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
Wow.
Okay. Well, that was some semblance of a podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please do head over to Apple TV Podcasts or the podcast platform of your choice and leave us a 5 Michael Sosha rating. you can follow us on social media at Pilot TV Pod, at James C. Dyer, at Boyd Hilton, and at K. Ribeiro. We, as we've said, will be back on Thursday with a show. It's unclear whether it will feature porn stars or not. You find out then for Pilot Plus. And we will be back next week on Monday for... He says, playing for time while he brings up the calendar, which may or may not actually contain any of the shows that we are indeed covering next week. Who knows at this particular stage?
Does anyone use the calendar?
I use the calendar.
I actually filled in a lot of the calendar just
before.
Did you?
Yeah, you're such a swat.
You are a swat.
But not everything.
No, he didn't. So on next week's show, we will quite possibly be covering The Idol, possibly, Sky Atlantic.
Well,
no,
who knows?
We
I don't think they're going to send out screeners.
Right.
Yeah.
We may not be covering The Idol.
Which doesn't bode well.
I hope we're going to... It doesn't. I hope we're going to be covering Arnold... The Chief Action Officer's documentary.
Suddenly reality TV arrives.
It's a documentary, Boydie. Oh. It's a documentary.
Yeah, he's a hypocrite.
That was never in doubt. And possibly The Crowded Room on Apple.
Yes, The Crowded Room, hopefully.
What's The Crowded Room?
That is
Tom Holland.
Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
There's also a significant other with Catherine Parkinson and Yusuf Kakur from that show that you liked.
Yusuf Kakur is excellent.
He's fantastic in
we'll get onto this on the WhatsApp group. We'll wrangle it. We'll work out which ones we're going to do. But you can find out whether we're going to get to see The Idol and report back.
It's unlikely. So I think The Idol is going to have to wait for spoiler special, I'm afraid. Yeah, because I don't think that's... Even though it's aired in Cannes at the Cannes Film Festival.
I'm very confident we're not going to see it in advance.
They're sending out screeners.
Well, we hope you enjoy the podcast. Obviously, if you want to keep in the whole Gallows Pole vibe, maybe play it back at 0.5 speed just for the lols. But yeah, we'll see you on the flip side. Pilot out.